let's get to the point where she meets Robert Taylor, her second husband. They are fixed up, correct?
Yes. I believe it's Zeppel Marx, the Marx brothers. She was friends with him. And I believe it was through that connection. And they were seeing each other. And they were seeing each other kind of casually for kind of a long time. But then there was this article that was published called Hollywood's Unmarried Husbands and Wives in 38. Yeah. And, you know, they named Clark Gable and Carol Lombard, Stanwyck and Robert Taylor, and a few other people. And the studios got very upset about that. And Louis B. Mayer said to Stanwyck and Robert Taylor, you better get married because this is not good for either of your careers. And so it was sort of under the gun a little bit that they got married, which is not the best way to, you know, start a marriage, particularly.
I feel I read that he was 6 years younger, and I also read he was 4 years younger, but he was younger.
He was younger, yes. And she, I think the thing about her that's interesting, after the debacle of her marriage to Frank Fay, what she seemed to be drawn to, she liked younger men, pretty, and she could teach them. And see, what's interesting about that to me is that in her films, in her best film, that's also, she liked that in her films too. She liked the innocent man, the beautiful, innocent man that she could teach and that she could be kind of purified by in her films. And I think also in life, she was drawn to that. So that's a point where, you know, the films and the life, I think they do converge a little bit.
I think she really loved him. I do. I don't think he really loved her.
It's tricky. I think they had a good thing at the time, and it wasn't, you know, some great passion or anything. I think what happened, though, is that after their divorce in 1950, I think that Stanwyck's feelings for him kind of grew over time.
Yeah.
And she kind of made it into this big thing, as people sometimes do, you know, when they get older. And I think maybe she idealized certain things, whereas the actual relationship itself, it might not have been. You know, I think he went off to World War II. They were working constantly. And then there were these embarrassing dalliances with Lana Turner and Ava Gardner, which, you know, could not have been pleasant for her because, you know, everybody talks to everybody else in Hollywood.
Of course.
And so everybody was going to know about that.
Yes.
So, you know, again, it wasn't as bad a marriage as the Frank Fay marriage, but I don't think it really didn't make her happy.
No,
I don't think.
I think he was very attracted to other women, obviously.
But I mean, listen, if you're working with Lana Turner and Ava Gardner in the 1940s, and you're with a woman who's older, always working,
right,
and you know, and telling you what to do a little bit. You know, being, she liked to be a little bossy. She liked that.
He was used to that with his mom.
He had all these masculinity issues.
Oh, he did.
You know, they called him gorgeous Bob Taylor. You know, and so if you see, like in Camille with Greta Garbo, which Stanwyck helped him, he's very, very pretty boy. But then, you know, he grows a mustache, and he's one of these men of that time who think being masculine means being grumpy. You know, and so he's like, I'm going to be really grumpy in order to be masculine. And to me, it's very unappealing.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, but like you said, and has been said by many, he was a mama's boy. His mother was one of these weirdos. Oh, my heart. And he ended up spending the night of his honeymoon with moms.
Right. Which, you know, I mean, what's going through Stanwyck's head during that night? I mean, you can only. So again, I think it's not a better. It's better than the Frank Fay marriage, but you're not. It's just, it's kind of bad in a different way, you know?
You brought up a wonderful film that I think everybody should see. If you want to see Psycho, Sicko, Mother Love, Silver Cord.
Well, that's what I was thinking, actually. That's exactly, because Turner Classic Movies just showed the Silver Cord. It's 1933.
It is amazing movie. It is sickening. You'll go gross. You know, she's talking about romantic mother love and all this stuff. And, you know, I felt that, you know, good for Maureen O'Sullivan for amscraying and I thought
Frances D.
Right. I loved her. And I was so happy. I just didn't get why the other woman wanted him. Because if you see the room, the bedroom scene where he's in the room and the mother is comforting him, and the wife walks in and they're both like, they both are like, they just got embracing, caught having something. They both, it's just, and romantic love with your sons. And she was just gross. Just, it's a great movie. Watch it. And this is, you wrote that it reminded you of Robert Taylor. And Robert Taylor was one of those guys, you know, the reporters would give him a hard time.
You have to remember at that time, he was responding to pressures of that time. And so he responded in a way that is pretty unappealing to now, you know. To be perfectly honest with you, he doesn't interest me particularly. I only put up with him and think about him because he married Stanwyck, you know, and I love Stanwyck. Yes. And so, and she had a thing for him.
Only for that reason.
Whereas, you know, on screen, she has Gary Cooper, she has Henry Fonda, she has, you know, these men that, I mean, in The Lady Eve, her and Stanwyck and Henry Fonda together in The Lady Eve, that's one of the all-time great. I mean, see, that's what, it's funny. She was known, you know, we were talking about all these movies that are tragic, Stella Dallas, Ever in My Heart, but she starts doing comedies. And, you know, she herself said, I'm not a funny person. I'm the least funny person you could find. But if the material is good, if the material is like The Lady Eve or like Remember the Night or like some of the other screwball, Breakfast for Two is a interesting little screwball, then, you know, The Lady Eve to me is the height of her technical mastery. And she looks her best. Edith Head is dressing her in that movie.
It's a wonderful movie. I love it. Every time I watch it, I love it. And, you know, so many actresses could not play comedy. Now there's Betty Davis. She wanted to. She did the one with Cagney.
But Bright came COD.
You know?
Right. Betty Davis and Joan Crawford couldn't play comedy. No. Katharine Hepburn could play comedy and drama equally. And Stanwyck could as well. It's versatility. And Stanwyck was very versatile. I think there's very little she couldn't do.
I agree. And did he decide to leave Barbara? And she had slash wrist. They took her to the hospital. So I imagine.
Actually, that isn't true, actually. No? And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. Because the thing about that is, in Al Diorio's biography from 1983, and then Axel Madsen wrote a book in 1994, they both say, I think it's October 7th, 1941, that Stanwyck was rushed to the hospital and it was an accident. She put her hand through. And both of them say, you know, it was a suicide attempt, blah, blah, blah. And so when I was writing my book, I'd been using these books. Uh-huh. When I was looking in archives, I never found that story anywhere. Huh. And so it seemed very suspicious to me, but I wasn't able to untangle it. And it was only when Victoria Wilson published her book in 2013 that I realized that accident happened in 1939. It happened in October of 1939 because there are photos of Stanwyck with her arm in a sling, just one arm, not two arms, just the one arm. And so I think what happened is either Al Diorio or maybe someone before him, they moved the date of that accident up to 1941 because they wanted to tie it in to Robert Taylor and Lana Turner making Johnny Eager together. And they wanted to make it seem as if it's suspicious. It happened in 1939, and Stanwyck didn't even want them to call Robert Taylor at the studio. You know, it was just one arm too. It wasn't both. Hmm. So when I realized that, I wrote to my publisher and I said, in the ebook version and any subsequent printings of my book, change that date and take out a few of the sentences there and change that date. And they said that they were going to do that. It can be very difficult sometimes when stories and dates are repeated over and over again.
Yeah, it becomes to get to true. The bottom it of becomes it. Like this is true because this one said it. This one said it. I've read it on different Stanwyck sites. I've read all sorts of things, but you know, like you said, you don't know. And they stayed together. Even during mm-hmm. his cheating and during everything, and Barbara was very busy working, doing, and he was too, and she right. was doing breakfast in Connecticut, right?
Christmas in Connecticut?
Christmas in Connecticut. Yes. Breakfast in Connecticut. I'm sorry, you guys. I know the name of that movie with Dennis Morgan and all those people. Mm-hmm. And that one, you find her to be stilted and it not to be a very funny movie. And correct?
Yes, I'm not a big fan of Christmas in Connecticut. No.
I watch it every Christmas, but I do not, I don't really laugh.
You know what I mean? Well, I think my thing is that I think that the director is to blame to me, Peter Godfrey. Uh-huh. Peter Godfrey then did two movies with her afterwards, Two Mrs. Carrolls and Cry Wolf. And to me, those are two of her at the bottom. Like that's at the bottom with like Red Salute. And the thing is, Stanwyck liked Peter Godfrey as a person. She even was a godmother to his daughters. She liked him a lot. And so I think she maybe didn't see that he wasn't the most talented director in the world. Certainly not talented enough to do, you know, she did three movies and Christmas in Connecticut, you know, they showed it at Christmas and it's popular. I just wish, I think a different director could have, because we've seen in Lady Eve, Ball of Fire, and lots of other screwball comedies, yes. She can be very funny.
Yes.
You know, I think to me, it's the director of Christmas in Connecticut. That's what makes it, it isn't a favorite of mine, but I do see why people enjoy it. It's a funny situation. Sydney Greenstreet is funny. I'm just not the biggest fan of it.
Oh yeah. Also, you mentioned another one that he directed and you despise this movie, The Two Mrs. Carrolls.
Yes. I'm not big on that. No.
I think it was the only film she ever did with Humphrey Bogart. And I have to say, Humphrey's emoting, you know, it's putting his hand on his head and he's having like a psychotic episode. Yeah, I mean, it's just
and
not
they're like
good
oil and water.
Right.
Some people are just not meant to be together. Right. And Stanwyck and but then two, the material and all of it, like I don't know, you know, what, you know, it was a stage hit. And I don't really know what actors could have put it over. But yeah, it's not a very good movie.
You know, like the little girl.
She works so often that, you know, there's going to be, you know, I mean, she made around 80 movies. And I would say, you know, there's maybe 20, 25, 30 of them that are great or good. And then there's, you know, some that are of interest, pretty good. And then, you know, there's maybe 20, 25 or so that are, you know, not. Yeah, when you work as often as she did, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be some movies that really are not too good. So Two Mrs. Carrolls, I'm probably not going to be putting on again anytime soon.
Right.
But the good ones.
I watch. If they're on, I watch it over and over. Right. Yeah, I just found his acting atrocious and the whole thing kind of got, like you said, you know, the doctor always talking about the murders and just, you know, Watson, what's his name? I love this actor, but he was really over the top in this one. And
and she's not at her best because she's just playing this wife who's being menaced. And you know, Stanwyck, the only thing that Stanwyck couldn't do is play someone who is not very bright or out of it. Stanwyck always, you cannot put her in anything where there's something about Stanwyck, she knows the score.
Right.
And that's it. Like, you can't deviate from I know the score too much with her. It's just something that she has. She can't play someone who doesn't know what's going on. Like, it's impossible. She can't do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yes. And it's a movie, and I would say it's interesting just to see poor Humphrey Bogart trying to act like a deranged madman. It's very...
Right, it's not his forte.
It's a very... Yeah, it's an interesting movie for that, but
But I mean, you know, like when people were asking me if it was someone young and maybe they didn't know Stanwyck and they'd say, what did she make? What should I see? Usually I would say, well, if you've seen Double Indemnity, because that seems to be the most famous of all her films, you know.
Her noir films. She did a bunch of those. Films. Yes.
Right. And she did the pre-code movies. She did the screwball comedies. You know, she did the adventure things. And then with Double Indemnity, she became this kind of queen of film noir. But then two, she was, you know, she would also do soap operas like My Reputation or The Other Love. There are two films that I like.
I
a
like
lot,
My
actually.
Reputation. I thought she looked the most beautiful in My Reputation, especially because her hair is down and she looks gorgeous. Absolutely
yes.
Fabulously beautiful in that film. And
yes,
I like it a lot. I do like that movie, I have to say. What's the other one you mentioned?
The Other Love, it's called. Have you seen that?
Is that with Henry Fonda?
No, it's her. It's Andre de Toff. She plays a pianist who has tuberculosis.
Oh, yes, yes.
And she wears
that.
One beautiful gown after another.
Yes.
You know, it's that type of thing.
Gary
it's
Loretta not Young.
The, yes. Yeah. It's not the best movie in the world, but she looks, I don't think she's ever looked better. She looks sensational in it. And so it's a lot of fun. Gilbert Rowland is a kind of gigolo in it with her for a little bit. So that's kind of fun, too.
So yes, he was very, oh, I love him. He's really, he was very attractive. Very,
yes.
Very.
So that was mainly, you know, it was a noir kind of cycle. She's doing things like Strange Love of Martha Ivers and File on Thelma Jordan. And it all takes place at night and there's rain and there's murders and she's going to yell at people and slap them and shoot them, you know, that type of thing. And
Dial In for Murder. When did they finally divorce? Who asked who?
It was the early 50s. And she, the thing that, he was shooting Quo Vadis in Rome. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, he, whatever he'd been doing with some of the people, he was living La Dolce Vita, you know, and it was getting into the papers. And
oh
it was
my.
One starlet after another. She went over there and it came to a head. And I think it was, again, if you, like we were saying with Frank Fay, when he hit her in public and it was getting reported, that was the last straw. And with Robert Taylor, the press was reporting that he was seen around with this starlet, that starlet while filming Quo Vadis. And that was the last straw for her too. She did it. If it becomes public, right. Or even with Dion, even when he was arrested in 1960,
right.
The way she's going to end it with you. If something becomes public, it was important to her that, you know, because she was protecting her work. She was protecting her image,
right?
And if you're going to go against that,
and
then
humiliate
that's the last
her
straw.
In public,
right.
Didn't he end up marrying an Italian woman and having two children or something?
Ursula something or other, yes, was the his last wife, and he had children with her. Yes, yes.
Okay, so another one. This is an interesting story from one of the movies, and I like how you wrote about it, is Crime of Passion, where she is this really hotshot reporter, and these two cops come in because they're looking for a murder suspect, and one of the guys is like, what are you doing here? You should be home making dinner for your husband. And the other guy is Sterling Hayden, the big galoot, and he comes in, and he's a cop, and they're, you know, she ends up leaving and to become a cop's wife, which is just like, you can't even fathom that.
Which was a huge mistake. And then the point of the movie is, here's this woman with all this drive. She capitulates to what this 50s society
is telling
her
she
needs
to
be.
Yeah, I want to darn
right.
your socks.
And then you put her there.
Yeah.
And so, of course, she's going to lose her mind. Bad things are going to happen because you can't put her in a kitchen and expect her to. She has all this drive. She has all this. She has to put it somewhere.
And he doesn't have any drive. She wants him
to
succeed.
And so again, it's like when you have a woman and you're putting her in the kitchen and the man, she's supposed to, you know, and she puts her drive into trying to get him his career ahead, and it just turns into this nightmare. And so it's really a feminist sort of movie. And she, you know, she was about 50 years old at that time. And that was, she's coming to the very end of her feature film career. In the 50s, she was doing a lot of Westerns then in the 50s.
But I also want to mention on this, this is a story that Virginia Gray says herself, that she worked on Crime of Passion with Barbara. And I believe she put something on Barbara's chair. And Barbara threw it down?
Well, I think what the thing there was that Virginia Gray was at some point involved with Robert Taylor in some way.
Yes, so
and
she
so Stanley, and so Stanley wasn't happy with
her.
No,
no. So she threw something around, and you know she had no reason to dislike her other than that. So
right, but that was enough.
Yes, she did Titanic. What year was that?
It's 1953.
And that's where she met Robert Wagner, who was absolutely gorgeous at that time. And how old was he? Robert wrote.
He was in early 20s and she was in her 40s. And so she was quite a good bit older than him.
And they had an affair for a few years.
According to him, yes, they did. And I mean, I don't see any reason to doubt it. However, he published that book when she wasn't around.
Yeah, and, but you know what? I think he'd want to protect her anyway because she's public, she's private, and she wouldn't want that to be out about her.
Right.
Because it would make her look, I don't know, desperate or something. I'm with some 20-year-old.
Well, I mean, I think in 1953, it couldn't be publicized.
No.
Whereas now, it actually is good publicity.
Yes.
Whereas it would have been bad publicity then.
Yes.
For them.
I said, go, Barbara. Because she really was a lonely soul. And what he wrote about her, you know, I read Victoria Wilson's book, and she was coming on the show. She wrote so many pages. She's in the publishing business, and she got together. She said she had hundreds more, but only basically stopped at 1939. And the second half of the book was supposed to be 1940, and it's an 800-page book. I liked her a lot. She got me William Wellman Jr. and a couple other people. But she also was controlling to the podcast. So she was like, we've got to cut this. And then we just decided not to do it. Mutual decision. But I don't know what I was getting at.
We were talking about Robert Wagner.
Oh yeah. Robert Wagner. I believe him. And I believe he did. I don't know if it went on as long as he said, but
probably. Yeah. Cause then too, Folly Granger said in his own memoir that he had a kind of one night with Stanwyck, and he was again, a great deal younger.
And
so
handsome.
I think we can see, you know, she was after the Robert Taylor thing, she was sleeping with much younger kind of pretty boy types. And that was what she it was enjoying at that time. And so, yeah, fine. That's good.
Yeah. And she never got publicly involved with anyone again, correct?
No, that's correct. Yes, she did not become public. And then, you know, if anyone would ask her, you know, the only publicity is sometimes it would be Robert Taylor. She keeps a photo of Robert Taylor near her bedside. And then when she went to Robert Taylor's funeral, she was very on Stanwyck in that she cried a lot and made kind of a to do.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. It's very hard to say. To me, it feels like it's the sort of thing that it changes over to what the relationship was and then what it became in her mind as years went by. You know, I mean, he co-starred with her in her last feature, The Night Walker.
That was too. Some kind of movie, huh?
Yeah. Her work is what it was the most important thing to her. And so I think, you know, the Furies and 40 Guns, you know, those I think are her best Westerns of the 50s. And then All I Desire, the Douglas Sirk movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, she's really wonderful in that. And also in There's Always Tomorrow. In the 50s, there's still quite a lot of good films.
There's Always Tomorrow was one with Fred and Fred McMurray. and that Joan horrible Bennett. Joan Bennett, and he should have left that family. 1, 2, 3, skidoo. You know, they were a horror. And she, Joan, was a monster. I mean, who wants to be married to a woman like that? It was just...
Oh, I mean, it's tragic. It's a tragic situation.
Right.
And I mean, and really that's more his movie than hers.
Right.
And she, whereas All I Desire is very much her movie.
Oh, I love that
movie. I'm always thinking of, do you remember the scene where, you know, she's this vaudeville, you know, she's kind of this broken down vaudevillian, and she comes back to her old home that she left years ago. And the look on her face when she sees her old house, there's just something so, it's just, you know, you look at her face and there's no other actor who could have been so deeply emotional and nostalgic. And there's so much going on in her face. You know, I think that's one of the most touching close-ups she ever did.
It was. Well, she did so many great ones, but she was wonderful in that. I really, really enjoyed that movie. The Furies was quite the movie. And,
yes.
Boy, oh boy, my mother got into it. I watched it with my mother, and my mother was incredibly religious. So it got to the point where Gilbert Roland is going to be, spoiler alert, killed. And he's Barbara's friend, just platonic, but her dear friend. And so he's going to be killed by Walter
Houston. Her father.
Right. So my mother goes in the room, and I don't know, he's saying his prayers. I don't know if he has a rosary, beat him out. All of a sudden, my mother comes out of the room, and she starts saying her rosary. I'm like, Ma, he didn't die. But she just wanted to get into the act. I'm like, okay, Ma, participation in movies. Okay, do it.
But I mean, the most shocking thing that happens in that movie is when she throws the scissors at Judith Anderson and disfigures her father's new wife.
I never in a million years saw that coming.
It's shocking because you don't expect it, of course. But then when she does it, you hear this horrible sound. And then there's a close-up of Judith Anderson holding her face, and there's blood coming out between her fingers. You know, Anthony Mann, the director, shows just enough of it for maximum impact, and it's very upsetting. You know, because it's so unexpected, it comes out of the blue practically, and it's gorier. It's just gorier than you expect it to be.
Yes, and it's this incestuous thing of
she's competing with her father. And they're kind of in love with each other. No man is good enough for the daughter. No woman is good enough for the father. And so it's this very, and it's the King Lear sort of thing. It's like King Lear and the daughter. So, I mean, that's a great movie. And 40 Guns is a great movie where she's the Catherine the Great of the West with all the men at her beck and call, you know.
Rootin' tootin' shootin' toots. That's what, for sure. So she was her, Night Walker was in what year?
That was 64, and that's her last feature film. That came after her anthology series, which only lasted a season. And I think the thing is, in the 60s, she was in her 50s. Most of a lot of the feature films were being shot in Europe, and she didn't like to travel. She wanted to stay in Hollywood. She was a Hollywood person.
But the things that
were being shot then were TV projects. And so she had to move into TV. And she got The Big Valley, which was a successful show for her, and it ran for 4 years. That's the way a lot of baby boomers, that's probably the way they first saw her, and then they maybe would see the older movies later on. But the first exposure to her was on The Big Valley,
and also some people, the Colbys or something like that. But she did a movie called The Walk on the Wild Side, where she played a lesbian madam who was married.
Right.
And it wasn't a very good movie. Cappuccino was lovely, but she was certainly not a great actress.
It's a very watchable, and it's got a great credit sequence, if you remember, with the cat and all that.
Yes.
Credit sequence is the best part, and then Stanwyck scenes are the best part of that movie.
But she got a lot cut out because she wouldn't go to Europe, right? Because they were shooting some of it over there.
A lot of films were being shot in Europe, and she liked to stay in Hollywood. So, and then also you have to remember she was in her 50s and she had let her hair go white,
which was amazing. She didn't, amazing.
Right, which you know, no one does that now.
And no one did that then. She was the only one.
And no one did that. She said, my hair went gray and it's going to be gray and that's it. Take it or leave it. And so, you know, I mean, Cate Blanchett and people now, if they're, I'm sure they're not going to let their hair go gray, but she said, my hair is gray, this is it. And so on The Big Valley, and then the few things she did after it, you know, her hair was white by the time of The Thornbirds, you know.
Yes. I want to talk about a couple of the films, because she did do TV movies of the week, and I've seen them all. The first one she did was The House That Wouldn't Die, which I didn't really like, but I love Richard Egan. And I the girl was the one who was in The Exorcist. Then she did the one with the sleeper cell of Barbara. What's her name? The one who was in Valley of the Dolls when they did that one.
Barbara Parkins.
Barbara Parkins.
Touch of Evil.
Yeah, what a wonderful
movie. Taste of Evil? Now, Touch of Evil is Orson Welles.
Yeah, I can't remember. Taste of Evil.
Taste of Evil. Yes. You don't touch it, you taste it. That's right. Okay.
So she did these. A lot of the actors did, and I really am hooked on these. If I can catch them on YouTube, I will watch them. I love these.
Yeah, the funny thing is, the only thing of Stanwyck's that I was not able to see was the third one she did. It was called The Letters. It was a kind of anthology TV movie.
Did you see it?
I finally saw it on YouTube, but it was after my book had been published.
Yeah.
And she just, it's one of these things where there's several different stories. And
yes,
so her story is maybe only about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And so it's only of interest for fans. She isn't in very much of it.
And
then,
you know,
really in the 70s, that's all she did. She did those three TV movies and she didn't work. She had had a health scare. She was going to do a TV movie called Heat of Anger. And she became ill. And so Susan Hayward had to take over for her. And I think maybe that's part when something like that happens, your offers are probably, you're not going to get too many offers after that when you have to drop out of something because of the ill health, you know?
Yeah. And she, the letters, it disturbed me because, you know, she was having trouble with her false teeth. And I'm not putting anyone down with false teeth, but you could really hear her. Like you said, the S's, she had a lot of trouble.
Well, in the Thornbirds, I think you can definitely.
Yeah, because she had a larger role in that as well. And like you said, her acting, it's like 101. That scene where she says, I am young inside, that is amazing.
Right.
And it's true. The older we get, we still feel like kids. My mother felt like a kid. Everybody I know who's older, they don't feel old. Only the outer shell looks older.
And what's so beautiful about that scene when she says that is it's in an extreme close-up on her face, and her eyes are the eyes of a girl.
Yes.
They're the eyes of a little girl. And so it's like when she's talking about it, even though her hair is white and she's wearing her face, which is remarkably, you know, even though she has teeth problems, remarkably unlined. And even her figure, too, they're like she never. She always kept the exact same weight.
Yes, she never gained.
It's beautiful. It's so beautiful because her face when she's saying it and the tears are in her eyes, she still looks like she could be 15, you know. And it's about how this woman still feels young inside. And I think Stanwyck knew this was kind of like a last stand. It was like a last moment for her to make a statement. You know, which is what she was always doing in her movies.
She did a beautiful job. And the last acting work she did was the Colbys, right?
Right. And that was, you know, Aaron Spelling got her involved in that.
Nighttime Soap. Yeah.
She wasn't happy with the scripts that she was getting. She wasn't happy about the unprofessionalism of the younger actors who would sometimes not know their lines. And Stanwyck was famous for not only knowing all of her lines, Stanwyck was famous for memorizing the entire script. She would memorize everything so that if somebody else, she knew everybody's lines. That's how seriously she took it. And so when she came to the set of the Colbys and a Tracy Scoggins, I think that was her, or someone like that, doesn't know her lines. she would say, you know, I'm ready to work, and if they aren't, you better get them together, because I'm, you know, this is a, so she was not happy with that. No. And that was the last time that she worked.
Yeah, she stopped. In front of the camera. She quit. And also she said had some horrible things. Her house burnt 3 times.
There were several house fires there, and she lost so much. And I think we all lost a great deal of your things. Her sister and she lost so much in those house fires.
And then she got
And then also she was a burglary, and the burglar pistol whipped her. And this, she was older and not in good health at
How
that time.
Horrible! And he pushed her in the closet and said, "You better stay in there, or I'll kill you."
Oh, it was like one of these, one of her noir movies or something.
But how
and yet
awful.
She was an old lady at that point and frail,
yes,
and not in good health. And so, you know, resilience. What resilience she had. Terrible things had happened to her at the beginning of her life and at the end of her life, and yet resilient. She was so resilient and just she. Well, when her house was burning in the 80s, you know, I think she said, "You're on, boys," you know, to the firemen or something like that. So, I mean, she rolled with the punches. If anybody rolled with the punches, it was her.
She was, you know, an amazing woman. And I feel, I wonder why she never did meet someone else in her life after that.
Well, when she was older?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe she felt she had enough. I mean, some people do. And she hadn't had notable success, really.
Yeah, so
also, though, maybe there are some things that she had, but she just, we don't know about.
Right.
Them. She kept them so private. I hope that that's the case.
I hope so, too.
But I think she was, there was a man who was her manager. And his name was Larry Kleno, Kleno.
Uh-huh.
And I think when she was older, he was very important to her. He took care of everything for her, with her house, with her. And so she relied a great deal on him. And I think one of the sadder things that I learned, and I was very sad when I read this, when she was very old, towards the very end of her life, Larry Kleno, you know, said that he thought that she'd been forgotten. And he was trying to get her some more fan mail. He was trying to get some people, because she thought people had forgotten all about her. And, you know, I was a little kid then. If I had known that, oh, I wish I had written her a letter.
Me
you
too.
Know?
But I did. But I didn't really know her until I was older. And boy, I would have written her a letter, because she deserved it. If anyone deserves to be remembered, it is definitely Barbara Stanwyck.
I agree.
She is. She was an amazing woman. She was an amazing actress. And like you said, she had much adversity, but she always came out of it. When she had the kidney surgery, she said she went to the other side and it was cold and dark. Oh,
yes.
It was not that nice white light. Where did
no,
she die?
It wasn't.
No,
that wasn't.
It made me scared. I'm like, oh, no, not that. Please, Barbara.
But, well, you know, she levels with you.
Yes.
You know, she isn't a white light type. No,
yeah.
I think, but that's what's so wonderful about her, because, you know, she faced in her films and in her life, she faces the very worst. And what you get from her is you can get through it. You can go on. You might lose some things,
right.
but you can get through it if you're tough enough, if you're self-reliant enough.
So did she die at home? Or did she die in a hospital? And how old was she? And when was it?
I'm pretty sure it was 1990, and so that would make her, it would be in her 80s. She'd been in ill health for a while. I don't remember if it was. I think it was at home. I don't remember though. It might have been in the hospital. But I do remember that she said in her will she wanted no funeral. She didn't like Hollywood funerals. That's very her. And she wanted to be cremated, and she wanted her ashes to be scattered in a place where she really enjoyed making Westerns in a, I wish I could remember the name. I think it's something like Loma Pines, something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she wanted her ashes to be scattered there, and no funeral and no fuss. And that's the end of it. So.
And that's what she got. And, mm-hmm. of course, this is, people said the only thing on her shelf was a picture of
Robert Taylor.
Right. And she would talk to the picture, and when he died, talk and whatever.
Yeah, you know, I think those are sort of tabloid
stories. Exactly.
I don't know how she might have had a picture of him around. I don't know how truthful. Well, I think that was just to sell newspaper.
Yeah, obviously. I don't know how truthful. Unless you're listening to her, how do you know she's talking to her?
Right. How on earth? Because, you know, certainly the only one who would know is her manager, and he wouldn't be putting stories like that out.
No, so, you know. Also, it was said the only picture she had was a frame, beautiful framed photo of Joan Crawford.
Ah.
You ever hear that one?
Yes. And now I have to ask you, have you listened to on YouTube to the conversation between Stanwyck
and Shirley?
Yes, I was
going to ask you that. Editor tapes. Yeah. Of course I have.
I mean, that's fascinating. The thing is, though, I don't know how that. I mean, did Stanwyck know she was being recorded? Did she know that Shirley Eater recorded everything?
I do
maybe,
not believe that for a moment. Not for a moment.
No. So I don't know how ethical it is to be listening in on a phone conversation.
I know.
Conversation
I felt guilty about
but,
it.
But it's
but
irresistible, isn't it?
Yes,
it's
but I listened. But I listened to everyone, and Joan was drunk as a skunk, and then Barbara was being gossipy. Oh, honey, let me tell you what she did to Frank.
She was very nasty. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, listen, she tried to be friends with Joan Crawford. As we know, Joan Crawford was a handful and very difficult.
Yes, and she had to be the boss, the big boss girl, you know.
Right. And I don't know how. I mean, the thing is, now we should say, though, I think to Crawford's credit, when Stanwyck was having really bad troubles with Frank Fay and he was beating her up and this and that, she lived very close to Joan Crawford, and Stanwyck would sometimes go and hide out there at Crawford's house.
And perhaps
and
that
Crawford
started
would
the
let
rumor
her do that. Right.
The rumor that she and Joan were sexually involved.
I doubt that very much.
I do not believe it either. 100%. I do not believe it either.
But you know, so I think if Stanwyck was here and if she knew that we had listened to that phone conversation, I bet that she would say, you know, she helped me out, you know, when I was in trouble, and you know, that was a good thing. So I think that was the basis of whatever friendship they had. They both were working a lot. They weren't always in the same city or this and that. And Crawford could be very difficult. She was an alcoholic.
Yes.
And she had control issues, as we all know.
Yes.
And so I think that you should look at that phone conversation on YouTube. I think you view it through that lens. And also, through it, Stanwyck had no idea. You know, we say things to people when we don't know we're being recorded, and
I think that's pretty gross. Yeah. See, that's why I did have terrible guilt, but like you said, I couldn't resist. I just couldn't resist.
And partly it's because there's so little of Stanwyck didn't do talk shows. There's so little of her, you know, interviews. Actually, there's an interview on YouTube. A man was interviewing her for some book, I think. I don't know if you've listened to this. She sounds very old and ill. It's a phone interview. But what's interesting about it to me is she talks about her sister, Millie. And she says, you know, many times I wish that Millie had been alive to see my success, because Millie died before she became really, really successful. And she said, yeah, she's the only one I ever wanted to impress, my sister, Millie. I never cared about it. And so that's fascinating. And that was on the record. You know, that was an interview on the record, and that was very interesting to me. That's on YouTube as well.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. I definitely will. Anyway, you know how much time we did?
Probably a lot, I bet.
I had a great time, though.
Oh, me too.
It's been fun, and I hope you come on again when your new book on the Hitchcock book comes out.
Because I'd be happy to.
I will definitely want to read that, and be fun to talk about. And you guys, check this out. There's so much we did not get to. The book is really good. It's called Barbara Stanwyck, The Miracle Woman by Dan Callahan. And this is Dan. And Dan, I had a great time talking to you. I had a great time reading your book. And I love having a fellow Barbara Stanwyck lover, because I love her. And I'm so glad you
love
her.
I love her too.
Yes.
I do. I really do.
So, Dan, I want to thank you. Jeez, We've done an hour and a half, so I'm going to cut this into two parts. Okay. We could have gone longer, but I think this is good. I think we should stop here. And thank you so much for coming on. And like I said, remember, I want you on when your other book gets released. I think in September, right?
Okay. Yes, in September it is. So yeah, absolutely. We can stay in contact about that.
Yes, I definitely want you on. And I had a great time. So thank you so much, Dan. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And we will be back. Thanks a million, everyone. Thank you, Dan.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll talk soon, hopefully, yes, about Hitchcock. I had a great time. Thank you.
I'm so glad you did. So did I.